We have about 10 of our members over there this morning. I guess it's pretty crowded, so we welcome all of you. We're in a series on communication. This will be the last one of the first part of the series. Then a little bit later on, we're going to have some special lessons where we actually apply a lot of different rules for communication to make us better communicators. And this morning I wanted to cover what do we do when communication breaks down? When communication breaks down. In the passage that Chris read, about if a brother sins, go show him his fault. If he listens to you, you won your brother. If he doesn't listen to you, take two or three more, that by two or three witnesses, every word may be confirmed. And then if he listens, great. If he doesn't, then take it to the church. If he doesn't listen to the church, let him be as a heathen and a tax gatherer. We look at this passage, and probably in all your Bibles, you have the heading which says church discipline. And there's nothing wrong in saying that. But it could easily be titled The Restoration of Communication. It is said that the greatest breakdown of communication is when people stop listening to one another. And three times in this passage, that's what it refers to. The brother refuses to listen. Verse 16, but if he does not listen to you. Verse 17, if he refuses to listen to them. Also in verse 17, if he refuses to listen even to the church. This sinning brother has failed to listen to the offended brother. He did something that was hurtful to that brother. But he doesn't want to entertain that thought. Maybe he thinks he's perfect. Maybe it's just out of pride. Maybe he legitimately doesn't see how he hurt that individual. We don't know. But he doesn't listen to them. And then he doesn't listen to the witnesses that were established. He won't listen to the church. And the result is that when a person doesn't listen, it can result in them not even being able to be heard by God. Their communication with God is cut off at that point. Because Christians communicate. They must communicate. And in rejecting that premise, Jesus says about this individual that it results in his judgment. But is it possible? Is it possible that what Jesus says works in church discipline can work in our families and our friendships? I believe it does. In fact, I believe we're foolish if we don't apply the same thing to our own communications. You know, if we reject the words of Christ, if those words are not applicable to us, and remember that there's no word of God that's idle. He just doesn't give us something to read. He's not giving us this is not a bulletin or a periodical. This is what we read to be better Christians, to function more wisely. Well, using substitutions, I want to take a particular relationship we have here on earth and just substitute it in this text so you can see that it is a valuable tool for all of our communication. I'm going to use husbands and wives. Husbands and wives. Let's go ahead and read it this way. If your spouse sins against you, go and show them their fault in private. Go and show them their fault in private. It's not an uncommon occurrence. This isn't like newsflash. There's a breakdown in communication in a marriage. You know, that's not a huge newsflash. That happens all the time, doesn't it? Whenever you have two humans coming together in a covenant, the human factor makes it turn into a breakdown. It's very, very difficult to go through marriage and not have, as we covered in the first lesson, a failure to communicate. Well, often husbands and wives do not focus well when they're hurt by one another. And it results in a complete breakdown of communication. A husband, here's some indicators that that's happened. Maybe a husband might storm out of the house to get away from his wife that he doesn't wish to talk to right now. I've seen that. That's why I got a car. No. But a wife might cross her arms and turn away from her husband in protest. You know, if you do this, and your husband's over here, you have a failure to communicate. Another indicator might be a boyfriend. I actually knew somebody who, whenever, you know, the pressure came upon him from his girlfriend, he'd go, la, 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 la. That's an indication they are not listening. A wife might lock herself in her room, shutting her husband out. A common indication of not listening is when couples talk over one another. James says we must be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. And if we don't, if we're talking over, you know, if you ever look at an argument, blah, 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 they're trying to, it gets escalated. They want to be heard, but nobody wants to listen. And so, these are all indications that someone is refusing to listen, resulting in a need for a strategy. And the longer it goes without correction, then the deeper of danger that will result. Did you know most infidelity in a marriage isn't the result of, you know, you just walking down the road and, hey, look at that, and then you go for that? That isn't it. In a marriage, if, and go back and read the stats. Before usually infidelity and then the end of a marriage, a divorce happens, you always hear the same things. Well, but I feel that this, she didn't listen to me anymore. Or maybe the woman might say, well, but this guy at work, he seemed like he cared about me. People want to be heard. That's who we are. God even has a whole thing called prayer, to where God says, listen, you have an open line to call me anytime you want, 24/7. Drop to your knees and pray. And that's really flattering to think the creator of the universe cares about what we think. But when we feel like our spouse doesn't care about what we think, then turmoil results. Special note though, when it says in private, go to them in private. It does not mean bringing it up in a crowd or in front of the in-laws. That's very bad. Okay? You go to them in private. Oftentimes, you know, if we feel like they're not listening to us, then, you know, somebody might say in front of a crowd to get together and say, oh yeah, this guy has a problem. Or this guy, or my wife, this bothers me about my wife. That's not how it's going to work. You go to them in private and express those things. If you want your communication to collapse, then ignore the private principle and watch what happens. It'll just cave in on itself. But if he listens to you, then you have won your spouse. This is the goal, to win back the spouse or whoever, child, friend, to win them back. It's not about winning an argument. It's about winning the person. And let me tell you, I love to win an argument, but that's not what it's about. It's not about proving me right or you right, but God right. Chess. That we follow God. We must not ever forget this. Whatever steps it takes for him or her to listen to you, then do it. And repeatedly saying the exact same thing in the exact same way and expecting a different result, that's called nagging. Okay? That's not what we do. If you say, well, but, you know, hey, babe, you hurt me in this way, but I don't agree with that. Well, but you hurt me in this way, but I don't agree with that. Then go and try to explain it better. It's okay. Well, this didn't work. Let me go over here and stand in my shoes over here. Go over here and stand in my shoes over here. We do things to try to communicate differently. Tell them that you love them very much and that you would never do anything, that you believe they'd never do anything on purpose to hurt you. That's very, very important. Our mess ups, You know, most things that happen in a marriage or in a relationship, it's not a result of like we're like with Wile E. Coyote and get the Acme kit and we're trying to plan out exactly how to hurt somebody. It's just neglect. We just fail to not plan to avoid it. And then it just occurs. And you have to recognize that, because if you go into a discussion thinking that this person intentionally tried to hurt you, when they didn't, that's going to completely cave everything in. You know, I try to, with every person I ever meet, I try to extract at least one lesson that I can use the rest of my life. And this was the big thing that Bob Williams communicated to me. I always go into a discussion and say to yourself, I don't think this person did this intentionally. And you know what? It works. It helps so much. You know, almost like, think of it as like a baby. You know, I don't know about you. I don't like it when, you know, I used to hold like one of our babies and then the baby would vomit on me. I don't like that. I don't go, oh, that's so cute. I smell like sour milk. This is awesome. But you look past that because you know the baby didn't intentionally do that. That baby's so innocent. That baby didn't have a schematic and show how to properly project onto a suit. That isn't what the baby did. And 99% of the things that people do, particularly in the church and especially in a marriage, are not done intentionally. It still hurts, but by addressing it in such a way, it furthers the communication. I can honestly say that my wife has, and I hope that you can say this about your wife, guys, I know my wife has never done anything to intentionally hurt me, ever. Oh, has she hurt me? Yeah. Intentionally? No. And it makes things a lot easier. You know, when you look at that child of God and you know, hey, I just have to try to communicate why this hurt me. Let them know that you need to get past the offense. Explain the nature and the depth of the hurt. We need to become experts at communicating when we're hurt. Not just saying, I'm hurt. Expand on it. Learn to present it. Take a Zig Ziglar course on how to outline your argument. Do something, but become better in your outline. Now, at this point, we often want so badly to be heard. If they won't listen to us, we naturally seek out someone to listen and say, just for them to say, yes, I can see why you're hurt. Or maybe we just want to blow off the steam and we want to go to somebody and say, he was such a jerk for doing this to me. But that only worsens the situation. And it's extremely important, if you are willing to take this step, this next step about going to two or three others, if you're not serious about doing that, then what you are hurt with isn't important. It simply isn't important. I cannot stress that enough. Many times, you know, there might have been a brother or sister who I might have hurt. And, you know, they've come to me and I don't agree with what they're saying. I don't agree with their argument that they have. I'm trying to listen. I may not see it. But then I ask them, you know, well, you feel pretty strongly about that. Let's just get a couple people and run it by them and see if they would agree with that. And if they do, if I respect those people and you respect the people, then if I let them, because you bring them in, hopefully they can see it and then apply better communication skills. Well, what he's trying to say is blah, 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 blah. Oh, yes. But if somebody's not willing to do that, then they have to drop it. If they're not willing to go to that next step, then you have to accept that it wasn't bad enough. You're just being picky or something. It's very, very important that we stress that. And this is how you know if you're truly hurt and you need healing, is if you say, I can't take it to that next step. I want to go ahead and just go tell all my girlfriends or tell my guy friends about it and complain and be vented. Oh, you got some trouble coming. The Bible doesn't allow us to do that. Jesus does not advise that. It's bad, very, very bad. But if your spouse does not listen to you, take one or two more with you. Notice this does not say, go and tell two or three friends what a jerk he was. This is not handled in any way that we wish for it to be handled, but we have to follow with the idea that we're trying to reestablish communication. That's the key. With that in mind, the following must be carried out with certain care. Ask if it'd be okay to meet together with a couple of the elders or maybe another couple from the church family to resolve the issue. I've actually done that before. The preacher's not perfect. I knew I could fool you for a decade. Of course not. There's actually been times where, you know, Jenna and I, we couldn't resolve something, and we just invite another couple over that we have respect for. And we just invite them over for dinner. And we say, we want you to hear something. Because if we both love those individuals and they weigh in on something, then that often resolves the conflict. It's not like you're putting together a tribunal and you're going to prosecute somebody. That's not what it's about. It's about trying to reestablish the communication, something to separate in that. And make sure that there are people with whom both of the members of that marriage respect and are in the church body. 1 Corinthians 6:1 tells us about not bringing our matters before the world. If you want a worldly result, bring your matters before a worldly people, and that's what you'll have. Guaranteed every time. How could they think spiritually and spiritually deal with the problem if they're not spiritual? It just won't happen. And this is why it's so important to be involved and close with your church family. Because if you don't have a close church family, a body of believers that you know love you and you love them, then what's going to happen later on when you might need their help to resolve an issue? Want to know a reason to bring your children to the youth group, to be involved in the studies? You want them, by the time they leave here, to have a group of peers that will help guide each other on their way to heaven. If you do not have that peer group, then you don't just call up strangers. Say, hi, I know we don't know each other, but I think you really care for me. I'd like your opinion on something. That's not what it's about. It's about being close and then being able to call upon when that help is needed. Now, it could be something as simple as inviting another couple over for supper and asking their opinion. It could be like a counseling session with a couple of the elders. But either way, you have to be among a couple people that care about you and you respect. But if the spouse does not agree to meet with a couple of others, try to understand why they do not want to do so. There really are only a few reasons that it could be. Maybe they're ashamed of their behavior. Maybe they think, oh, well, you know, my image to these people are that there's nothing wrong in life. Well, they don't know you very well if that's what they thought. And you have to remind them once again, the opportunity to listen and resolve it so that you won't be forced to have to deal with it. You know, that's the option. Yeah. It's always best to resolve the issue privately. You know, let them know. You know, you might, I know I've had some times, and Janice had some times before, where one or both of us were acting immaturely. And then, like, maybe Janice would say, well, let's go talk with another couple, or I'd say, hey, let's run this by the elders. And then we both look at it and say, wow, you know, this is really something we should resolve ourselves. Most things happen that way. Maybe they're absolutely right in their position. They're so convinced that there's no way that they could be wrong. Then you need to give the following proposition. Honey, I might be wrong in this. I need to know if it is so. If the two people that we choose, that we respect and love, and we know they're going to be honest with us, if they come to us and we sit down, we tell them what we're struggling with, And then those two say, well, I think you're wrong, then I'll accept it. Because we believe them to be reasonable. That's a fair deal, isn't it? And that's happened many times. Maybe they're too upset at that moment. Well, give them some time to cool down and to contemplate it. Sometimes we want resolution, but we're unwilling to wait for it. Has anybody ever mentioned that patience is a Christian virtue? Of course. Maybe they don't trust that it will be resolved. Well, remind them that resolution is the whole reason for this meeting, because we can't get past this. But when the meeting does take place, be calm and organized in your thoughts so that by the mouth of two or three witnesses, every word will be established. Now, you remember that the people you chose care for your souls. You remember that you're working toward resolution. You remember that you're not seeking to be right, but whole. And you remember that you keep focused on the issue at hand by not allowing diversion tactics to throw it off. The meeting that you have isn't where you go in or you have that other couple and you say, well, you know, he or she did something to me that hurt me. Well, let me throw out the 20 things you did over the last 20 years. That's not what it's about. Okay? There's no room for people to become historical and hysterical in the kingdom of God. We need to be calm, cool, and collected. And that's difficult to be at times. But you solve the one issue. The one issue. And you don't solve it by throwing 20 other issues up there. It's like the man who had a problem in his marriage. And, you know, these two husbands were talking one day and he said, oh, I said something that offended my wife. And he says, well, I understand. You know, I have a lot of pent-up issues. And he says, well, what do you mean? He said, well, I went to ask my wife to pass the peas at the table the other day, and I accidentally said, you messed up my life. I mean, that's obviously there's a lot of pent-up issues with that. And, you know, but 99% of the time when a couple follow these steps, the conflict will be resolved and communication will be strengthened. But what happens when the witnesses hear it, agree with the violation, and the guilty spouse is unwilling to listen? Then sometimes, you know, with that can't happen. It's happened before. If your spouse refuses to listen to them, well, then you tell it to the church. Now, this isn't talking about sending a group email out. It's not talking about having a big meeting with a megaphone. That's not what it's talking about. This is called intervention. Intervention. You know the TV shows where you gather a bunch of people who love this individual, and then they walk in, and then like, well, what's going on here? Where's the hats? Is this my birthday or something? Usually they know they're guilty. They walk in. But then the people surround them. It's a process of elevating the problem to confront. And since they would not listen to the words of the spouse or the witnesses that they chose, it had to be elevated. Notice the church is the broader group in which it's to be taken to. You want to make sure that the people involved are mature and understanding and caring. Let me give you an example. I know you might be squeamish. You might say, wait a second, what is this, some kind of cult? No, it's not. This has nothing to do with that. This is about whether we follow Jesus' words or not. If we're going to claim this is the word of God and we live by every word, but then we don't, then slap a big label on your head called hypocrite and move on. We either apply it or we don't. Let me give you an example. John had been married to Becky for about 5 years. And they were, if there's anybody visiting here named John and Becky, I'm not referring to you, okay? But they were Christians and they had two young children. John knew the scriptures condoned alcohol, but not drunkenness. And as a result, in the past, he would have a beer with a meal after work. Nothing serious, but over time, one beer became two became three. And before you know it, six pack a night. He used it to cope with the stress of life. And it had become a problem. Well, Becky was concerned and spoke with him about this, but he wouldn't listen. He would simply say that she's exaggerating the situation and continued on the path. It's just six beers, then seven, then eight. He would simply dismiss it. Eventually, he'd start going to the bars after work just to avoid her, quote, nagging about it. That was sad. The man who used to pray with his kids at night before they go to bed was drinking with his buddies in the bar. One of these nights, Becky confronted John with extreme firmness. He agreed to meet with a couple elders from the church. When they sat down in the meeting, the elders agreed John had a problem and should seek help. They even offered to fund a counselor or whatever else might help, which was generous. John left the meeting with a bad attitude. He said Becky exaggerated the situation, but she was not doing that. He continued this practice for a few more weeks, even drinking more than before. One night he was pulled over by a police officer and received a drunk driving charge. It was in the paper. Becky decided it was time for an intervention. Together with the elders of the congregation, they assembled about 25 members of the church family. When John came into the room, they all told him how much they loved him and wanted this issue resolved. He sat in the middle of the room and wept, knowing that he had a problem and that they were going to help him the best that they could. He accepted responsibility for his actions and sought out help. He even came before the congregation and confessed such. And there in the front, with him, holding his hand and supporting him, was his wife Becky. They went on to live a happy marriage, have prosperous children, and lived in a faithful relationship to God. That's what we're talking about. This is what Matthew 18 is referring to. Conflict resolution. There was a breakdown in communication. And it could happen. 99% of everything never goes past the two or three witnesses. You never even hear anything about that. I can look around this room and think of at least 20 times the first two stages have been carried out. And you know who you are, and you know who I am. But sometimes it ends up going further. But it still can be resolved. And this is the reality. It says, if your spouse refuses to listen even to the church, let him be as to you as a Gentile and a tax collector. This is the true reality of the situation. That when the spouse no longer cares what his spouse thinks, what his witnesses think, what his whole church family thinks, then the church must recognize that individual as not even caring what God thinks. As the NASB updated edition says, whatever you shall bind on earth will have already been bound in heaven. We only follow suit with what God already recognized. God expects the church family at that point to recognize it in the same way. A church family must recognize this in order to protect the spouse. She needs to be supported in her struggle. Needs to protect the children. People need to be there for what is missing in their lives. You don't have to have a dead father to be fatherless. You just have to have a father who's not there for you. The church, they need to see that God is serious about living for him. And he is. It's likely that a marriage like this will not last. It is sad, but it's the truth. Hopefully that spouse will come to their senses somewhere down the road. Perhaps when he's flat on his back or in a gutter fighting for his life, he will finally look up to heaven. And I've seen that as well. And they came back. But the consequences in this life can be horrible. The same can apply to a parent-child relationship, to a brother-sister relationship, or a friendship. If you're serious about a relationship with Jesus, then we follow the path that he puts out for strong communication. That's our job as a Christian. This can apply to all your relationships. It's up to you, though, to try and follow that path. If we fail to do so, we fail horribly. If we do our best attempt, things always turn out better than what they could have. And so, with that in mind, if there's anything that you're struggling with, if you have yet to become a Christian, if you have a hurt on your heart that you would like to share with your church family, if you're looking for a church home and have expressed interest in this church family, or even any of you at Golden Living, if you want to study, let us know. Come forward while we sing this invitation song.